First, we don't always want to think about difficult concepts of sadness, loss, or mortality. They're not fun. But at the same time, many of us like listening to sad songs or watching sad movies. Our guest today grappled with that contradiction and her own feelings for many years before putting it into a new book. She says that those negative emotions provide balance, bring us together, and help us appreciate the good things and the beautiful things in our lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think about the emotion of sadness in your own life? Do you like to watch sad movies or listening to sad music? Does it help you even when you're feeling down? Have you ever thought about why? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Cain is author of the new book, Bittersweet, How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole. It's an instant number one New York Times bestseller. Susan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
I want to start where you did a long journey really to this book. You started out by thinking, what's the deal with sad songs? Why do we like them? Why do I like them?
Well, yeah, I had this experience all my life of experiencing this seeming contradiction, you know, between the music was sad, so it should make you sad, right? And yet I would listen to that kind of music and feel kind of a sense of communion with people, a sense of uplift, a sense of transcendence, like a sense that I can only describe as love. And I started looking into it and realizing that many people feel this way. People have been wondering about this for a long time. And that it's really connected to what I call a bittersweet tradition, which you can see in all our religions, our artistic and philosophical tradition, that teaches us that this bittersweet state of experiencing joy and sorrow simultaneously and understanding that joy and sorrow are forever paired is connected to our source of creativity and connection and transcendence. And we live in a culture that tells us not to go there, but that's a big mistake. You know, it's a kind of robbing us of many of the deepest and most meaningful aspects of our lives.
Right. You write about this, our love of positive things as Americans, how other countries are suspicious of how often we smile. Why do we seem maybe particularly allergic to these bittersweet emotional states?
Well, we come from a cultural heritage that really, since the 19th century, started kind of dividing people into winners and losers. Whether we're conscious of it or not, that's a way that we tend to see ourselves and each other. And once you do that, you want to do everything you can not to be in the loser camp, right? And so around the 19th century, we really started avoiding the expression of any emotions that would be associated with the loser category, you know, so anything that had to do with longing or sorrow, or like in the psychologist William James, the 19th century, noticed that it was becoming out of fashion even to talk about bad weather, because even that was seen as being too negative. And we really live with that heritage today. So nowadays, you know, college students will talk about what they call the phenomenon of effortless perfection, which is like the pressure that they feel to be fit and attractive and academically and professionally successful, and to do all of this apparently effortlessly, you know, as if they were born winners.
Your book isn't an advice or self-help book, but there's definitely some advice in it for how we can confront sadness, the bitter part of our bittersweet feelings, and deal with it and accept it. Can you give us a couple starting points to not just try to, you know, shove it into the attic of our brain?
Yeah, well, it's really about accepting both states of life, you know, the joy and the sorrow, the bitter and the sweet. So it's not saying, you know, like disappear into sadness and don't come out or go bitter or anything like that. Far from it. It's really saying that these two things are connected. So what do you do then? Well, you take the sorrow or the pain you feel and you try to turn it into beauty. So what I say to people is, whatever pain you can't get rid of, make that your creative offering. This is what artists have always done and known. And when I talk about a creative offering, I don't necessarily mean, you know, a painting or a song. I mean it much more broadly than that. If you look, you know, after 9/11, suddenly we had a surge of people signing up to become firefighters. And in the wake of the pandemic, we see a surge in medical and nursing school applications. So there's something that humans have the capacity and the tendency to do, which is to take something painful that has happened and turn in the direction of meaning with it. You know, not to accept it, not to descend into it, but to make meaning.
We're talking to author Susan Cain about her latest book. It's called Bittersweet: How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole. All about some emotions that we might think of as negative, but actually play a huge role in our lives if we know how to deal with them and accept them in ourselves. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Does what our guest is saying make sense to you? How do you see the role of sorrow in maybe your own life experience? Is there a musician, a song, or maybe a movie or book that captures this sense for you that is kind of sad and yet beautiful at the same time? Where do you turn to when you need something that sympathizes with that feeling in your own life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with author Susan Cain, with us today sharing her latest book. It's called Bittersweet: How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you deal with sadness or sorrow in your own life? Have you found ways that to fit it into your life, to make something good out of it, maybe, as our guest says, something beautiful out of it? And are there songs or movies or artists that fit that mood for you when you need something like that? Where do you turn? Call 800-642-1234. Or what person in your life do you turn to? 800-642-1234 is the number. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Susan, I want to get into another piece of the puzzle. It's actually right there in your subtitle. When you're talking about bittersweet, it's not just about sadness and sorrow, but this feeling of longing, like we want, like we're searching for something in the midst of that. Can you talk about that sensation?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the core of our emotional DNA is the feeling of longing for a world that's more perfect and beautiful than the world here. And you can see this in all of our religions, right? Because there's the longing for the Garden of Eden and for Zion and for Mecca. And the Sufis call it the longing for the beloved of the soul. That's the Sufi lovely way of saying the word God. And then you see this in our art as well. You know, you have Dorothy longing for somewhere over the rainbow. You see Homer, you see Ulysses in Homer's Odyssey longing for home, and that's what sets him out on his epic adventure in the first place. It's homesickness that makes him take the adventure in the first place. So this is very core to who we are, and we tend to think of longing as like something that you would be mired in that would have you stuck, but in fact, the etymology of that word is of the word longing is literally to grow longer and to reach. So it's our sense of longing for a better, more perfect world that inspires many of our greatest creative outputs, our sense of connection in general. It's one of the best aspects of ourselves.
Now, maybe I'm biased as a musician, but it seems like music is really the thing that can capture that feeling, the tension that you can build up through chord changes in music and waiting for that resolution, longing for it, waiting for it in a lot of ways. And you keep coming back to music in the book. Can you talk a little bit about, say, oh, I don't know, Leonard Cohen seems to be somebody you like to go back to again and again.
Yeah, I've loved him all my life, and I was always trying to understand why I loved him so much. And it's really because he expresses all these ideas, and in fact, or his music does. And the epigraph of my book is a line from one of his songs, which says, "There's a crack in everything. That's where the light gets in," and that's really like the ultimate philosophy of the book. But I would say of a lot of music in general, there's just a sense. There's a sense of an expression of us living in a world that is simultaneously beautiful and broken, and you can acknowledge both of those things without letting go of the other. You know, I think there's a feeling people have of like, if I acknowledge too much the brokenness, then I'm going to lose sight of all joy. You know, I'll fall into depression. And then on the other side, there's a feeling of like, if I become too joyful or focus too much on beauty, then it means that I'm turning away from the problems of the world. And neither of those things has to be true. In fact, the opposite is true. You know, the full life and the whole life is to deal with both ways of being. And I agree with you that music expresses this almost better than anything else.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Sue is with us in Southwest Wisconsin. Sue, hi.
Hi.
What did you
want? I was just going to say that I agree. Music is a beautiful consoler, but also my mother had passed away about 10 years ago, and she was a lovely woman, but she lived a long life. She was 89, and she raised. Her and my dad raised 8 of us children. So when she passed, you know, we were all pretty heartbroken. Well, my nephew is a musician, and he wrote a song, "Oh Sweet Lorraine." So if ever we start feeling down in the dumps or missing her, we just pop that song in, and it brings a smile to all of our faces.
And Sue, is this a song you will still listen to, you know, in 2022?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And that she passed away in 2012. And, you know, it's a beautiful song. It talks about the joy that she brought to a lot of people's lives and how much she's missed.
So thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Susan, I mean, that really speaks to so much of what you've talked about in the book.
Oh, my goodness. I so agree with that. And in fact, I lost my father to COVID not so long ago. And it was really my father who instilled in me my love of music in the first place. And I will say that there's a way in which, you know, I can listen to any music, but in particular music that he introduced me to. And it's like an instant connection that, you know, where I'm kind of carrying him with me as I move forward through life. So I absolutely know what Sue is talking about.
Sue, thank you for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Tom now in Fish Creek. Tom, hello.
Yes, hello. I wanted to suggest a piece of music that I've listened to for years. It's by a group called Count Basic, a takeoff on Count Basie for sure, in a genre of what was called acid jazz. Not sure why. But the song is Joy and Pain, and the entire lyrics are joy and pain. I like sunshine and rain.
Tom, can I ask, when do you go to that song? How does it make you feel? Are there certain emotions where you need that dual message of joy and pain?
Well, the music itself is sort of middle of the road between those two emotions. And it helps, I think, keep an even keel.
Tom, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I've been a producer, dug up the track. I will, I'll check that out after the show. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, that, Susan, I'm right in the title there, a song aimed at trying to thread that needle, joy and pain at the same time.
Yeah, gosh, I love that. And what I was thinking about as Tom was saying this is there's this incredible video that went viral on YouTube, and it shows a 2-year-old boy at his sister's piano recital. He's sitting on his father's lap, and he's hearing Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata for the first time. And the boy becomes like so overcome with emotion that the tears are streaming down his face as he listens. And, you know, and all the people watching this video, they're all commenting like, what was that? And one of the comments said something like, this boy is experiencing for the first time the mix of joy and sorrow that makes life worthwhile. And that always struck with me, that there's the great truth of like, that's where the place in which we are most ourselves, you know, most fully human. And I think that's what music like that expresses, but that's also a way to live in an open and honest way.
Tom, thanks a lot for the song suggestion at 800-642-1234. Susan in Kane is with us talking about her new book. It's called Bittersweet, How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole. Susan, I've brought us to music a lot here. That's not the only thing you do in the book, though. You go to different religious traditions, meditative traditions, and you try some things out to try to, in some ways, seek out this experience, this bittersweet experience. Can you share some of what you learned along the way?
Oh gosh, yeah, there was so much. So I guess just to give you, I'll give you a taste of two different things. One is the tradition of Buddhist loving kindness meditation, which is a meditative practice in which you wish basically love and well-being and ease to yourself and to those you love and to your acquaintances and to the difficult people in your life and then finally to everyone. And that's an incredible practice for getting in touch with all of this. And I should say, I'm actually developing my own version, which will be live on my website quite soon at susankane.net, if you're curious. And then I guess the second tradition I would tell you about, this comes from the Kabbalah, which is the mystical side of Judaism. And there's a parable there that says that all of creation was originally an intact vessel of divine light, but that the vessel at some point shattered, and that the world we're living in now is the broken world after the shattering. But we're surrounded, because of that breakage, we're also surrounded by these shards of light from that divine vessel. And what we can all do is we're all gonna notice different shards. And when we notice them, we can bend down and pick them up. And I find that to be such a useful idea of how to live in this world, you know, like to acknowledge the breakage that we see around us, but also it's like permission and exhortation to turn in the direction of beauty, you know, to bend down and pick up light where you see it.
Many of the examples you give, some that you just gave and others like the Sufi traditions, all these mystical traditions seem to be trying to capture this bittersweet state that you're talking about. I mean, this is something that people have been, in one way or another, thinking about for probably thousands of years, right?
That's right. And that's what's so funny about the whole thing, that, you know, we live in a culture in which it's kind of odd to be talking about this, you know, like a downer to be talking about it. But yet, as you say, you know, you look at all these different religions, and particularly the mystical side, and they're all talking about this longing. You know, Sufism, maybe most of all, never compared quantitatively, but, you know, you look at the 12th century famous Sufi poet Jalal al-Din Rumi. And all his poems are about, you know, be thirsty. You should be full of longing. He has one poem where he's talking about someone praying to Allah who becomes disillusioned because he never gets an answer back. And then the guide of souls, Hidr, comes to the man and says, this longing that you express is the return message that you're looking for. And the grief that you cry out from draws you toward union. So there's an understanding that the grief and the longing itself are what carry you closer to divine union. Now, that is not a message we ever get in everyday modern culture. And yet there it is, you know, across our wisdom traditions.
To bring things back to the origin of your story, one of the reasons you started thinking about why you like sad music is people made fun of you for listening to sad music. If that's us, if that's me not getting why we would want to brush up against these sad feelings, can you leave us with some thoughts on how to open our minds and give it a try?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, maybe it's not just about, I mean, not just maybe, it's not just about music. And there are different ways of accessing this state of being, and they're different for everybody. You know, for some people, it might be looking at old photographs, or, you know, some people take pleasure in a rainy day. Like, they may not want to live in constant rain, but there's something about a rainy day that makes them tune into a different frequency. I actually have a bittersweet quiz on my website and in the book that you can take. And just looking through the items in the quiz, I think would give you ideas of how to access this state. But yeah, I would look for the places where you feel like, you know, touched in this way and follow them.
Susan, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Susan Cain is the author of the new book, Bittersweet, How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole. She was with us today making the case for accepting some of our difficult emotions as part of the balance of life and maybe as a way to find beauty in our lives.